You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Tuesday, July 17th. Let's cock-a-doodle do it. This is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am your host, Dane Martinez. They call me Speed the Spitting Statistician, and I am joined, as always, by FSWA Hall of Famer, my man, El Rey de Fantasía, the King, Scott Engel. Scotty, how you doing on a Tuesday?
Well, I'm doing very well. Relaxed. Getting ready for football here.
That's what I'm talking about. Getting ready for football. The boys of the boys of summer have their midsummer classic today. We'll chat it up about that a little bit later on. But we are getting you ready for football. Remember here, Roto Experts in the Morning. We ride with RotoExperts.com, and you can get the Roto Experts exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package right now for all the insight you need to win your leagues and win that cash. You can enter the promo code THE King at checkout for a special discount. Plenty of ways to join the show with us. If you want to get down like my man Kenny, you could holler at us at 844-843-6879. We'll be happy to take your call. Our guy Chris Bavona, the manimal, is down there in the fourth floor in the fantasy pit of misery. Dilly dilly to him. But let's get started on a Tuesday. Scotty, big talk. You know, yesterday at 4 o'clock was the deadline for people to, you know, kind of sign a deal or play under the franchise tag. It didn't happen with any of them, okay? Ziggy Ansah, Lawrence in Dallas, the pass rusher. But the biggest one here, obviously, is Pittsburgh Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell. This has been kind of a game of chicken. They've been staring each other down for years now, okay? The franchise tag for the running back position, Scott, is about $14 million, just north of $14 million. Right now, Devontae Freeman is the highest paid running back in the NFL in terms of like annual value at like just over $8 million, okay, $8.25 million. Reports came out that the Steelers offered him a 5-year, $70 million deal, which would have been $14 million a year, and Le'Veon Bell said no to this. I'm telling you something here. His agent came out, Scotty, and said that this will likely be Le'Veon's last year as a Steeler. He's going to hit the open market at the age of 27, being one of the best running backs in the NFL. Next year, you know, Adam Schefter was even saying a holdout is possible. Later on, Le'Veon Bell said, nah, this is going to be my best season yet. He's got to perform if he's going to go hit free agency. How do you think this shakes out, not only this year, but in the future, Le'Veon Bell and the Steelers? Because I actually think this is Le'Veon Bell's last year as a Steeler. And quite frankly, I think this was strategy on the Le'Veon Bell side, because I think Le'Veon is going to walk away from Pittsburgh at the same time as Big Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. And, you know, it's interesting to play in a fantasy dynasty league. You know, you don't know where Le'Veon Bell's going to land next year. But you want to win this year in a dynasty or a keeper league. It's in a dynasty league, it's sort of a tougher role because, you know, you don't know what situation he's going to be in. But in a keeper league, you can decide whether to keep him or throw him back in the pool. So I'd rather be in a keeper league and be a Le'Veon Bell owner than be in a dynasty league and, you know, face this kind of uncertainty here. You know, Le'Veon's doing what I think a lot of NFL players do when they get to a certain point of their career, and they want to have that one big final payday because NFL stands for not for long. You and I both know that.
This is true, but Scotty, let me ask you this. When the report, if this is true, the report, I think it was Ian Rappaport over there at NFL Network said that the Steelers gave them, offered 5 years, $70 million. I mean, $14 million for a running back is, you know, is pretty good, Scotty. I mean, right now, like I said, Freeman leads the league in salary at the running back position at $8.25 million per year. If they did, in fact, offer him $14 million, I mean, do you think he's going to get better than that in the open market a year from now?
Look, if you know, you just throw up your hands and say, if that's not good enough, you know, go ahead and walk. What else do you want us to do? You know, somebody might actually pay that. So
I guess if he gets out there in the free market.
He gets out there in the free market. If it gets icy, you know, he can always go back to Pittsburgh.
I guess that is true. That is true. I got two other things that I want to ask you about as it relates to this story. One, last year and this year now, part of my narrative on the Pittsburgh Steelers is, and part of the reason I think Le'Veon Bell is playing it exactly like this is because what I mentioned before, I think Lev Bell is syncing up his time with the Steelers with Big Ben Roethlisberger, okay? You know, we've heard all this buzz about last year. Did Ben have it left in him? Did he still want to do it? Well, you got to think it's very possible that this could be Ben's swan song. And you got to, if you are Le'Veon Bell, entering or maintaining the prime of your career next year at age 27, are you really going to want to go from a team that is probably, you know, the division champion, a contender for the Super Bowl, to having to go through a rebuilding with Josh Dobbs or Mason Rudolph when you are in the prime of your career and you could be the final piece for a different championship team? I think Lev Bell is just syncing it up with Big Ben because he doesn't want to stay in the Steel City when a rebuilding process inevitably happens after Roethlisberger moves away. What do you think?
I think we're a year away, too far away. Because you
but
don't
that's
know
why he doesn't want to lock himself into 5 years, though,
yeah,
Scott.
Yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. Mason Rudolph could step in next year and be spectacular for all we know, or they could go out and sign a free agent or trade somebody. So I think that's really, really hard to say, you know, with the Steelers. You know, you always have to look at an organization from the top down. Mm-hmm. And the Steelers are constantly a winning franchise.
Sure.
You know, they are probably in pro sports, I would say, probably more than any other franchise. They've probably been more consistently successful than any other franchise, I think. And that includes the Yankees, too, because, you know, we've seen down cycles, you know, with the Yankees. But every decade, the Steelers are in some sort of contention with their conference, and that's from ownership on down. So I think if there's a rebuild coming in Pittsburgh, it's not going to last for too long, if it lasts at all.
That's probably true. You know, they have been very consistent as a franchise, starting from the Rooney family. Only three head coaches in the last, what, Scott, like 40 years between Noel, you know, Cowher, and of course now Mike Tomlin. I hear you. I would say the 80s might have been one decade where the Steelers were not at the top of their game. In the AFC, that was dominated more by the Denver Broncos and the Buffalo Bills. But I get your point with the Raiders.
They were still contenders.
They were still there, absolutely. So I hear that. Here's the last thing I want to ask you about, because there was other news and notes from beat reporters about the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday as well. And as you mentioned, kind of dynasty or keeper leagues, Scotty, I am a dynasty league owner of Le'Veon Bell, okay? And so I'm very excited about that. I'm very happy with that. I have my RB1 locked and loaded and ready to go to defend my title. Here's the other thing, Scotty. I also have James Conner. Okay, James Conner, the backup running back, who is probably the handcuff to Le'Veon Bell. This is a kid who went to Pittsburgh, who faced, you know, lymphoma and other kind of, you know, challenges, but a lot of people like him. There's buzz about him now saying that he could be an every down back in this league. I thought it was very interesting, the timing of that news, Scotty, right when Le'Veon Bell is having these kind of contract issues. If you're in a dynasty league, does that mean you should be more likely to maybe try to hold on to the handcuff James Conner if you think that maybe Lev Bell moves on next year and then you have a ready-made starting running back for a high-octane offense in the NFL? Talk to me about James Conner.
I think that's maybe a little optimistic saying ready-made because, you know, we really haven't seen a lot from him.
Right.
So I think it's important in a dynasty league with the depth, though, to – you know, to have the handcuff there, but, you know, there's really nobody else who seems to be contending for that,
right,
for that spot right now. Like, yeah, they got Toussaint, they signed Steven Ridley, you know, there's really nothing there. You know, Jalen Samuels is a fullback.
Right.
So, you know,
I think they drafted this kid. I think they like Conner, though, right?
Yeah, I think they do, you know, and I think they certainly look to the future to him. So you at least want to have the guy that's going to get the opportunity.
Absolutely.
But you never know. You can't sit here in the summer of 2018 and tell me who's going to play quarterback and running back for the Steelers in the summer of 2019. I think it's too difficult to project.
All right, it is, but at the same time.
Did anybody last summer think that Alex Smith was going to play for Washington? I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No, but I did in this very same league draft Patrick Mahomes thinking that he was going to be the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs before too long. So, you know, I hear you.
Yeah, but my point is, you know, you don't know where these veteran quarterbacks
this is true.
Are going to end up.
You do not, but in the Dynasty League, you do have to try to take a little bit of a longer view in some elements.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, let's keep it moving to other things that will affect not 2019, Scotty, but the 2018 season as teams are starting to get themselves a rookie training camps are opening up this year. Veterans will be reporting starting next week across the NFL. I want to go to Philadelphia, Scott, where there was news on two players that are definitely fantasy relevant today. One on the kind of like cautionary side and one on what would I would think be optimistic. So I saw two reports about the Philadelphia Eagles yesterday. One saying that Jay Ajayi should get more carries this year than he was last year, that he's going to get, you know, more work and maybe not necessarily be that workhorse, but at least, you know, he does have the playbook and a whole offseason with the team and that he should expect to get more carries. And then on the flip side, head coach Peterson is saying that he is, quote-unquote, unsure if Carson Wentz will be ready for week one. I mean, we've gotten positive reports out of his rehab. All we've seen workout videos, these sorts of things. But at the same time, just putting caution on it, trying to manage expectations. Tell me what you think about the Eagles after this news. Ajayi maybe getting extra carries, doing more of the load in that backfield. And then how do you handle the Philadelphia quarterback situation vis-a-vis Wentz and Foles? Like if you draft Wentz in the, I don't know, ninth round or something, do you have to draft Foles in the 17th just to make sure?
I don't know if you have to handcuff a quarterback necessarily.
Okay. It's, but you draft,
you know, if you're going to draft, if you're going to draft Wentz, you know, maybe you want to draft Mahomes or
Luck.
You know, somebody like that. Or I don't think you want to have Luck and you want to have two risks there, you know, like maybe like Wentz and Goff or Wentz and Mariota or something like that. I'm not saying I'm against the Foles thing necessarily, but
what if you know, like really want the Philly offense because it's one of the best offenses in the league?
It doesn't have to be, you know, Foles. It could be somebody else. But I think we're gonna have to play wait and see here, and I'm gonna have to drop Wentz a little bit in my rankings.
Okay, so we shall see. Listen, we do think he's going to come back. He's coming back from the ACL. The question is just, will it be week one? Will it be like the third game of the preseason? Or will it be like week three? And if so, you got to figure that one out. Over in Carolina, was also some buzz today, Scott. I saw stories on two players in Carolina. Same kind of thing. One trending positively, one trending less positively. I want to hear what you think about these. First of all, in Carolina, we're hearing that the rookie wide receiver out of Maryland, DJ Moore, is quote-unquote looking good and ready to contribute right away. And then on the flip side, they are, you know, kind of managing expectations around the workload of Christian McCaffrey, saying that he may not necessarily get a bigger load and that that's why they went out and got CJ Anderson. Talk to me about Carolina, Scotty. Are you intrigued by this rookie DJ Moore, or do you think there's too much competition in Carolina for targets where there is Funchess, there is Olsen, there is McCaffrey himself? And then what about the idea of McCaffrey in the run game? Remember, there's CJ Anderson there, and people should not forget in Carolina, Cam Newton pretty much is the goal line back for the Panthers. How do you think it shakes out CMC and DJ Moore if they're in Carolina?
I think DJ Moore gives them dimension and maybe they've lacked, but I don't know how quickly can step into it at the pro level. Right. I think he's a guy who, you know, could be a real good third down receiver and possession guy who gets yardage after the catch and, you know, helps them move the chains. But how quickly could he become dependable? So, you know, you can't draft him as anything more than maybe a fantasy wide receiver five right out of the gate. You can't expect too much from these rookie wide receivers, some of them right away. As far as how the ground game goes, I don't think things are going to change a lot. You're always going to see Cam Newton get his chances. But at some point in his Correa, they might start scaling him back. I think C.J. Anderson steps into that Jonathan Stewart role where it's really hit or miss what the goal line work is. And with Christian McCaffrey, I think we know already who he is. In a PPR league, he's going to get a ton of touches, but in a non-PPR, he's not going to run enough or score consistently enough to be dependable.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, you got to check your settings and know how your points are scored in your system. Because, listen, as we've talked about this before, Scott, in PPR, Christian McCaffrey can be high as a back-end RB1, a great RB2. But you're right. He's not going to get goal line carries. We outlined that yesterday with guys like LeGarrette Blount, guys like Marshawn Lynch, guys like C.J. Anderson, who will, don't forget about Cam Newton. And then, listen, he's not going to get those carries in between the tackles. So I agree with you. And with DJ Moore, I believe he's similar to a lot of rookie wide receivers. You made the point. I think he's going to be, at least at first, Scott, better for his real-life NFL team than he is for his fantasy team, because he will provide, you know, kind of another weapon out there, something for the defense to consider. But it is starting to develop into a little bit of a herd there in Carolina. I want to ask you, I want to go back to
Before we go on, I do want to go back to the Eagles for a second.
Yeah, good.
And this Carson Wentz report.
Yeah.
I think it's too early in the summer right now to really know about this. Looking at Peterson's comments, he's not saying he won't be ready for week one.
He's saying he's unsure.
You know, I think we have to make clear for the listeners, though, that, you know, he's uncertain. You know, Right. You don't know. The medical staff has to clear him. That doesn't mean that there aren't positive reports about him. He has been playing in 7-on-7s, during camp.
He's just managing expectations.
He's been looking good, but he said, look, it's not my decision. It's really up to the doctors. There is a chance just as much that he will be ready for week one.
Absolutely. That's what I said, yeah. Scotty. I was like, it could be week three of the preseason. It could be week one. It could be week three. Peterson is just managing expectations. And so that means you guys should as well. With Ajayi, though, and I mentioned Ajayi, they're saying he may be primed to get extra carries. Talk to me about this running back room, Scotty, because I know you like, you know, it is a full-on committee, not a timeshare. It's a committee, okay? With the returning Darren Sproles, we gave him a little bit of props. He might get into the top five of all-purpose yards in this, his last year of his career. A lot of people, though, Scotty, have a little bit of buzz around Corey Clement. But I got to tell you, if there are reports that Ajayi may get more touches, you know, this year as that primary early down back, we know what Darren Sproles is capable of. What role then is left for Corey Clement, Scott?
I think it's a change of pace back. You're not going to see Ajayi get every carry. And I think, you know, they go full-blown committee here. Mm. It's, you know, From an NFL team's perspective, you keep the defense off balance. Of course, you know, you also stop certain running backs from getting into a rhythm, which could hurt Ajayi. But then you have to manage Ajayi because he's playing on arthritic knees. So I think it's more of like a complementary role to, you know, both Ajayi and Sproles, and you're not going to get enough consistent carries out of him fantasy-wise for him to really reach his ceiling, and he's going to be more of a DFS play. But he's more of a chess piece than anything else. Right. Fantasy-wise, it's going to drive you crazy.
Yeah, it definitely is, you know, to figure out which week he winds up spelling these guys or whatever, or do you wait for, you know, you mentioned how Ajayi does have the knee conditions. Maybe he's an interesting handcuff in case anything befalls Jay Ajayi at some point this season. We're good on that, Scott, because I want to move over to a piece of news I saw around the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore Ravens, Kenneth Dixon has been fully cleared at the beginning of training camp. And I'm going to just tell everybody, keep an eye on Kenneth Dixon. The Baltimore Ravens, the team, really likes Kenneth Dixon, okay? Alex Collins right now is there as the starter. You know, there's Buck Allen there as well. I'm telling people out there right now, I think this is the potential for a little bit of a diamond in the rough. I think the organization likes Kenneth Dixon, and to me, it was good news to see that he avoids the PUP list, that he's fully cleared coming back from injury. I think he could do just enough in this backfield to really frustrate Alex Collins owners and maybe make Alex Collins, kind of less than an RB2 for you. What do you think about Kenneth Dixon? I mean, he has shown flashes, but the injuries have always followed him around, Scotty.
Yeah, you know, I've certainly heard about it, but I haven't seen it. And, Yeah, Alex Collins to me is the guy, you know, top 22 fantasy running back. He's already proven that he's going to do the job. I haven't seen anything really from Kenneth Dixon and I'm not saying can't happen, but show me that he's too much of a threat to Alex Collins. I think, you know, the Ravens want to have that insurance there, you know, in case Collins, you know, starts to develop fumbleitis again. But, right, you know, if he doesn't, I can't see how he's not the lead back in Baltimore.
Okay, fair enough. What do you think? Is Buck Allen worth anything in PPR kind of formats?
Yeah, you know, that's a guy they, you know, they use on third down. But, you know, I think from a pure fantasy perspective, Collins is really the only guy that you want to have. And, you know, then you have, you know, potentially your handcuff and Dixon.
Okay, fair enough. So keep it locked, obviously, to the Fantasy Sports Network and Roto Experts in the Morning. We'll give you kind of the insights here on these running back rooms. And as news and notes come, we will obviously, you know, change it up. The King will update his projections. And remember, you can get those projections in the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Enter the promo code THEKING at checkout for a special discount. Scotty, I want to keep it moving here. We were talking about your ranks that we can find in the Exclusive Edge package. We've talked a little bit about your quarterback ranks, your running back ranks, and your wide receiver ranks already. You know, maybe we'll revisit them a little bit further on in the summer after, you know, you've had time to adjust them based on when we start hitting training camp and things like that, and we see what kind of position battles are starting to heat up. But in the meantime, Scotty, I want to look at your tight end ranks, okay? And you can find these over on rotoexperts.com in the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Don't forget about entering the promo code THEKING at checkout. And if you want to talk to us about them anytime here, Monday through Friday, bright and early in the morning, the number to call is 844-843-6879. Scotty, when I look at the tight ends this year, it seems like people are describing a clear tier at the top that are three tight ends, right? You got Rob Gronkowski, Travis Kelce, and Zach Ertz. I see that you have them as well in the same order, Gronk, Kelce, and Ertz. Talk to me, do you also believe that this is a clear tier, that the three of themselves have distinguished themselves as the elite tight end, and then there is a gap to whoever you have at, say, you know, tight ends 4 through 8?
I think it's Gronk and Kelce, and then you know, I struggle with whether Ertz is, you know, whether he has the track record to have that longevity yet. But then again, how can you doubt what he's going to do if he stays healthy again with either quarterback? So ultimately, I come to the decision that he is in that tier.
Okay, so let me ask you something about Ertz, though, okay? Because I agree with you, and this coming from, I have shares of Ertz all over the place. Ertz is, in fact, the tight end that got me to a championship in my Dynasty League last year with Le'Veon Bell, who I also mentioned.
So you're biased. Yeah, I got it.
No, I'm going to actually give you an argument of why he does not belong in that tier, and that's what I'm saying, coming from an owner of him, so trying to not share bias. Look at the last 3 years of Zach Ertz, okay? And I remember some of the injuries in there, but he played 14 or 15 games in this. Last 3 years, receptions, Scott, 75, 78, 74. Seems pretty consistent, right? Right. Yards, 853, 816, 824. Seems pretty consistent, right? I like that. Look at touchdowns, though, Scotty, over the last 3 years. 2015, 2 touchdowns. 2016, 4 touchdowns. Last year, Scotty, 8 touchdowns. I think that is the big difference. If you put him at 4 touchdowns last year, he goes behind Delanie Walker, behind Evan Engram in terms of the rankings, right? So here's my question. On an offense that Philadelphia has that we talk about is so strong and has so many options, okay? Jeffrey, Ajayi now, Carson Wentz even running. You know, we have Mike Wallace as a deep threat now, Aguilar. We talk about all the running backs. How can we expect Zach Ertz to once again get that many touchdowns, especially if that's the critical linchpin to him being in this tier? I'm almost worried, Scott, that, you know, he goes back down to 5 touchdowns and that all of a sudden makes him not worth the ADP of being in this tier with the elite three tight ends. Am I crazy?
Yeah, but you can't say, what if he scored only 4 touchdowns last year?
Well, I'm saying because he hasn't.
He
like, that was an outlier.
Because he didn't. He didn't. It's you know, I think the career is too short. you know, the track record is too short to call it an outlier. And, you know, you want to give it to Travis Kelce. When Travis Kelce, he scored four touchdowns in 2016, and he scored five in each of his first 2 years. And you could say the same thing about Travis Kelce, that last year was an outlier. And you also have to look at the fact that the quarterbacking was way better last year than the previous two seasons, and you have to project ahead, not behind.
Okay, fair enough. I'm just saying, you know, like the receptions look the same, the yards look the same, the touchdowns are changing. We do talk about, Scott, generally speaking in fantasy, how touchdowns are kind of flighty and it's not something from year to year you want to depend on. I'm just saying that that could be the case with Ertz, and it's not like the Eagles don't have other options that can score points for the Super Bowl champions.
Yeah, but they have a very powerful offense, and
sure,
you can't project it backwards 2 years ago when the quarterback situation wasn't as good as it is now.
Okay, fair enough. I hear that the pie for the Philadelphia Eagles could be enough to feed all those mouths, and I certainly hope that is the case. Scotty, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the All-Star game, a little bit about the festivities, and you spent a couple of minutes as well with Jeremy Hellickson. We'll hear that when we come back. Roto Experts in the Morning.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Yeah, Roto Experts in the Morning. You know what it is. Yo, don't push me. I'm close to the edge, all right? I'm trying to not lose my head. Here with Scott Angle, the king. I'm the spitting statistician, holding it down. We put the fun in functional sports radio. If you want to join the show, the number to call is 844-843-6879. We were talking about the tight end position and that clear tier of three at the very top. Rob Gronkowski, Travis Kelce, and from the Philadelphia Eagles, Scotty Zackett, Ertz when I pee. We expect some of the same production from him moving forward. You were mentioning the idea that you could say the same thing out of Travis Kelce. Let me zoom out a little bit, Scott, before we go to the All-Star game and your time with Jeremy Hellickson. My question, though, is, okay, so with Zach Ertz, we may believe that the Philadelphia Eagles offense has evolved and is like high-powered enough, shall we say, to be able to feed all those mouths that are out there. The pie is big enough, and I get that. I guess my question for you, I just want to check myself. Generally speaking, do you, though, agree that touchdowns, especially for pass catchers, are a stat that can fluctuate a little bit more year to year, and so you got to kind of keep an eye on that?
Yeah, I think you certainly have. It's kind of like wins in baseball, you know, that touchdowns can certainly fluctuate. But when we're talking about the Eagles, you know, Carson Wentz was a rookie in 2016, and it took a big step forward last year. It's really a different quarterbacking situation. You know, you saw signs with Ertz, but you know, it really depended on who his quarterback was. You know, these Eagles are different than they were, you know, just as recently as 2016. You know, and then you look back, you were talking about Ertz in 2015. It was different as then. Well, you know, the quarterbacking situation was different then. You know, football's a team sport. You know, people, you know, can't look at things just alone and judge the player alone. You know, in 2015, you had Chip Kelly, Sam Bradford, and Mark Sanchez. So, you know, to look back at it, it's totally different offense, totally different context. You know, it's interesting because sometimes, like, I'm in this Seahawks group, and I can't believe the amount of Seahawks fans that have so much disrespect in the rearview mirror for Sean Alexander.
My man scored like 27 touchdowns 1 year, didn't he?
27 rushing touchdowns, 28 total, and they say it was the entire offensive line, that you could have put Maurice Morris back there and he would have done the same thing. I said, football's a team sport. You know, you had two great offensive linemen, Walter Jones and Steve Hutchinson.
And the guard, Hutchinson, yeah.
But, you know, you have to give Alexander a lot of credit for what he did on his own. You don't rush for 1,880 yards and 27 touchdowns without being very talented yourself. You know, I don't want to digress into the scouting part of it that I got into on this board, but just, you know, I think people simplify things. And I'm not saying you. I'm saying people simplify. And football fans, you know, we get into these narratives and we simplify things. And I can't believe, though, in retrospect, you know, how many Seahawk fans have, like, no respect in retrospect for Sean Alexander. And, you know, it just made me think of that, you know, when we were talking about Wentz, that hurts it. Football is a team sport. You know, you know, one thing hinges on the other. And so many times football fans want to say, you know, this is the reason, you know, why this team wins or loses so much, and want to point to one aspect of the team. Even with the Patriots, it's not just Brady. It's not just Belichick. It's, you know, it's those two guys together. What would they be without each other?
No, absolutely. And there is the age-old question, does Tom need Bill more? Does Bill need Tom more? I think the answer to that one is C, both, right? It's about the talent.
Yeah, infighting among themselves about which one deserves more credit.
Don't matter when to me. Give them both, and I'll take the decade and a half that they've had together.
Nobody wins. Nobody has ever won a Super Bowl on their own.
No, absolutely. It does take all 53 men. I do want to ask you something, though, and I admit, Scott, that this is going to be kind of my litigious nature, trying to see how these apply. When we were talking about Ertz, one of the things you were saying is that, like, the offense is completely different, right? It's a different scheme. It's a different quarterback that's there. And so that should be reason to kind of have faith in that. Can you tell me how to apply the same logic to I'm out on an island on this one, Scott. I'm out on an island, I must admit. But I have concerns over David Johnson because of the same exact issues in Arizona. It's not Bruce Arians and Carson Palmer. It's like, you know, Steve Wilkes, rookie, with Mike McCoy as a new offensive coordinator, I believe, over there. And a quarterback who we have no idea of there. And so when we're talking about first-round running backs, those are just, to me, considerations. That have him behind guys like Todd Gurley, Zeke Elliott, or Le'Veon Bell. Why is it that when we're talking about Ertz and the evolution and how that helps him, why isn't the inverse potentially true with a guy like David Johnson, new quarterback, new head coach, that could be some challenges for him instead of evolving positively, devolving negatively with that offense?
I think it's really hard to predict either way.
Okay.
Because you're talking about a team which the quarterback situation could be improved. And that could only help the offense. You know, the quarterback situation without Carson Palmer was awful. And, you know, Johnson was also injured. If you want to use that to split hairs between, say, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, and David Johnson, you know, I'm not necessarily against that. But I can't see some sort of major decline from David Johnson, because no matter what coach comes in, he knows that David Johnson is the crux of his offense.
Sure.
And he's got to get the ball in his hands. Every situation is different. You can't compare the Cardinals to the Eagles. It's they're two totally different, distinctive situations.
Okay, fair enough. And you got to be.
But
if
you want to use it to make a close decision between those top ranked running backs, I'm not against that either.
Okay,
but I
fair
can't
enough.
Say I'm going to see a major decline from David Johnson.
No, that's not what I'm predicting either, Scott. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But I do think you're absolutely right. Wilkes, as the new head coach, will know where his bread is buttered, and it's David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald, right? But to your point, no. I'm not saying that David Johnson is not worth your first-round pick. I'm just saying that, like you said, Scott, when I'm splitting hairs among the top five, you know what I mean? Like Todd Gurley, Lev Bell, Zeke Elliott, none of them have new head coaches. None of them have a new quarterback. None of them didn't finish last year with a season-ending injury. You know what I mean? So literally, I'm using it as a tiebreaker among the top five. You know what I mean? But I'm kind of out on an island of that. Something doesn't sit right for me with David Johnson. I love the talent, but pure speculation. Scotty, can we move on to the All-Star game in baseball? Because I know you spent a couple of minutes with Jeremy Hellickson recently. We got a decent interview with him. And then I want to, you know, talk a little bit about the All-Star festivities. The All-Star game, the Midsummer Classic, is getting going tonight. I know you sleep on it, but I got a platform to make it a little bit more interesting. So I'll bounce them off you and see if it works. But first off, Scott, you did spend some time with Jeremy Hellickson. What'd you guys talk about?
Fantasy football.
The guy, nice.
One of the most intense fantasy football players in the Nationals clubhouse. By the all way, right. As far as the All-Star game goes, yeah. The only thing I watch is the introductions because I always right. remember, you know, as a kid, yes. I just always felt that the introductions were like the coolest part of the game and always
absolutely.
waiting as a young kid for like see what absolutely. Met was going to introduce because yes. like growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, like, you know, the Mets weren't very good back then. And,
mm-hmm.
and I would say, oh, well, here comes John Stearns, you know. And,
right.
so
absolutely. That
takes me back. I love to watch the introductions. And then then after that, I'll leave the game on in the background pretty much.
All right, fair enough. And we'll get into that in a couple of minutes. But first, Scotty, let's hear your interview with Jeremy Hellickson. We're talking a little bit of fantasy football. Let's see what Hellickson says on the clock. Cue up the horse, Scotty. Let's hear it straight from the horse's mouth. This is the King, Scott Engel, with Jeremy Hellickson on Roto Experts in the Morning.
Scott Engel of the Fantasy Sports Network about to go on the clock here with veteran fantasy football player Jeremy Hellickson. Jeremy, how long have you been playing fantasy football? And what's your track record of success?
I'd probably say I've been playing 8-10 years. Probably got 4 or 5 championships. Not a great ratio for how many teams I've had, but I've had some pretty good years.
You playing more than just the clubhouse leagues?
Yeah, I'm usually in maybe about 4 a year.
All right, so you sound like you're up for this. Let's go on the clock. A quarterback, Drew Brees or Jimmy Garoppolo, and why?
Drew Brees. Those weapons he has doesn't really get much better than that.
Okay, let's look at the rookies, and we'll go hometown with the Washington Redskins. Darius Geis or the Seahawks hot rookie in Rashad Penny?
Oh, that's a tough one. PPR, probably Penny. Standard, probably Geis.
Wide receiver, Adam Thielen or Tyreek Hill?
Oh, man, it's another one. I think I'd go with Thielen. Just preference. I mean, that's probably as close as it gets. Lot, I think just a couple more weapons in Kansas City that he has to compete with.
And a tight end, Evan Engram, the Giants, or Delanie Walker, the Titans?
I'll take Engram. I think you got to go with the upside. It's a close one, though, but I'll take the upside.
We'll give you one more running back, one that's a little bit easier. Leonard Fournette or Dalvin Cook coming back from the injury with the Vikings?
I think, again, PPR, you go with Cook, and standard, you go with Fournette.
Who's your favorite NFL team?
I don't really have one. I'm more just a fantasy guy. Grew up rooting for the Chiefs, but I'm not a huge fan. Just a fantasy football fan.
If there's one player that you have to have on your team this year, who would it be and why?
I've only done one draft so far, and I had to get McCaffrey. It's a PPR and a 0.25 per carry, so hopefully he can get up to around 200 carries, and you know, I think that'll be pretty good with 60-70 catches he's going to get.
So you already drafted very early. Tell us about this league, who you ended up with, and what the approach was.
Yeah, it's a new salary cap league. I got in with Brad Ziegler and a bunch of experts. Yeah. I think there's only a couple players. There's a lot of fantasy gurus in there. But yeah, it's a salary cap league. Ended up with McCaffrey, Mixon. Yeah, Fitzgerald and Demaryius Thomas, my top two receivers. Taking a chance on Luck, took him. Who else did I get? Deion Lewis, Ajayi.
How are you feeling about Ajayi this year with LeGarrette Blount out of town?
I feel good about him. I think not a lot of competition for carries from what I see, but hopefully he can just stay healthy. I think he has a pretty good year.
How challenging was it playing under the salary cap? Was that the first time you were doing it?
Yeah, that was the first one I've done. It was different. I don't think it really gets too tough until contracts start running out in a few years, but it was fun. It was different, and kind of curious to see how it plays out, but it was definitely something that I'll do again. It was fun.
How did you feel about drafting early, and how well prepped does it get you for your upcoming drafts?
I mean, honestly, I don't really prep too much for these. I just kind of...
So it helped in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say that. I just feel like I know football pretty well and know guys, and, you know, I follow some fantasy guys that, you know, I read and they help me out. But, yeah, I don't really prep before the draft. I just kind of just go in there and take who I think's best player.
So there you have it. There's Jeremy Hellickson there on Roto Experts in the Morning with Scott Angle. Hey, Scotty, I got a question for you. My man Hellickson, he said he's in four leagues, or roughly about four leagues a year. I know you're probably in a ton. Where for you is the kind of line, not for you, Scott, because I know you know, it's part of the business and part of what we have to do, but for the average fan out there, how many leagues do you think they should be in? Because I know it's fun and you love drafting and all that stuff, but I hate, Scott, where, like, you know, week 11 or whatever it is, you know, two of my teams are playing or contending for the playoffs, and let's say Zach Ertz is on one of my teams, but on my other league, I'm playing against Zach Ertz, and both of them are kind of important for me to move on. How do you deal with that, the kind of being the conflicts that always happen the more and more leagues that you're in? What's the right number of leagues to play in, Scott? Scotty! I know Scotty's going to come back. He always comes back.
It depends on who you're talking to about how many leagues you should play in. For me, at one point, it was 18 a few years ago, and it just turned out to be too much. So I don't like to do more than a dozen. But, you know, people talk to me, too. Why, you're in that many? You know, like last year, I was in nine. Okay. So because it's
so how many times were you playing against your own players?
See, but I don't worry about that. You know, it's like there's a few factors that go into that answer. First off, I never worry about who the other team has. I don't look at the opposing lineups. And a lot of people can't believe I don't do this, but I do. I don't look at the opposing lineups before the game because I can't control what the other team is going to do. No matter who they start or whatever, you know, I can't control that output. I can only control the output of my own team. So until I'm checking live scoring at 7 o'clock on Sunday night to see the results from all the first sets of games,
yep,
I'm not caring who the other team has. I can't control that. All I can control is how much my team is going to score. I don't need that, put that extra stress on myself. A lot of people can't do it. A lot of people don't believe I do it, but I'm not going to sit here on a national platform and lie. It's you know, I don't care about who the other team has. It's not like I can double cover Zach Ertz and shut him down. So I can't worry about that. Second off, one league has nothing to do with the other. I take each league as its own individual league. So one league has nothing to do with the other for me. I focus on one league at a time. If I'm in nine leagues, I do the lineups for each league one at a time and specifically hone in on that league.
All right, fair enough. And I thought it was interesting, Scotty. Yeah, you put him on the clock. You gave him two rookie running backs, you know, Rashad Penny and Darius Geis. He's representing Washington, but he picked Penny over Geis. Scotty, when that happens, you got to give him a little smack talk that they're going against their hometown, not their hometown team, but the city that they're representing. It's almost like when he picked Penny over Geis, I'd be like, hey, you think you're going to be able to be in the Washington bars, you know, because of that? You're going to be able to show your face in Washington picking Penny over Geis, but I did think that was interesting.
You have to give him credit. He knows not to believe, to think with his heart. You know, you can't do that. And by the way, that salary cap league that he mentioned, he's in.
Yeah.
He's in that league with our friends Brandon Marianne Lee and Andy Singleton. So
that's what's up. You know, some Fantrax people over there. Fantrax, by the way, a great place to play fantasy football. They got a lot of features that you don't have at Yahoo or CBS or anything like that.
Yeah, and also like you said, Brad Ziegler's in that, J.B. Shuck. So it's a salary cap combination of fantasy experts and Major League Baseball players. Look, you know, Jeremy's not an excitable guy when you interview him.
But you can tell
when you see him during fantasy football season. It's you know, you'll catch him in October. You know, he's kind of a different person than what you heard on the interview.
All right, fair enough. Hey, Scotty, let's keep it moving, though. It is the Midsummer Classic, okay, the All-Star Game, and I know we had the Home Run Derby. I know you're a sleeper over there on that one. Let me ask you a couple of questions about this one, and then I want to give you my platform of how to maybe make it less of a snooze fest for you. Scotty, first of all, taking the hill tonight is going to be Max Scherzer and Chris Sale in a repeat of the starting matchup for last year. My question for you is, and I know you're going to tell me that I'm being a Yankees homer, but I even put it up as a poll question, you know, who should start for the AL. And I really thought Severino was going to get the nod. You know, I understand Verlander's an option. Kluber maybe is an option. Garrett Cole potentially an option. But they go with Sale over all of these guys. You think they got it right in the American League?
Yeah, Kluber hasn't been pitching well recently.
Okay, but would you have got Sale over Verlander or Severino?
Yeah. Verlander is also, you know, hit some bumps recently.
My man Stevie hasn't.
So it comes down to Sale and Severino, and I realize we're having this argument because, you know, you want the Yankees guy.
Well, we just talked about Rashad Penny with the, with the Seahawks as well. So, hey.
No, but I realize the core of this argument. You think that Luis Severino should start the All-Star game.
So I think it would be interesting to give the young kid the nod. I mean, Sale did get the start last year.
And, you know, it's a Red Sox start in the All-Star game, which also, you know, probably burns ticks my you grits off somewhere.
Yeah, sure.
So let's take a look at them. You know, it's
fair
Chris
enough.
Sale's 10-4, 2.23 ERA, 188 strikeouts. In 129 innings, which is incredible, and a 0.90 whip. You know, that's certainly deserving of starting the All-Star game. Not that Luis Severino is not, but, you know, let's compare.
Slightly
Severino's
higher ERA, 231 to 223, slightly higher whip, 101 to 0.90. You're right, Sale has the strikeouts. Pretty much the same amount of innings pitched, right? Sevy has just two-thirds of an inning less. They both have Sale has 15 quality starts, whereas Severino has 14. So, yeah, Sale has a slight edge in all those categories.
I think Sale has earned the edge.
Okay. Fair enough. My only thing, like you said, you're right. We looked at the stats. The only thing for me is, like, he did get the start last year. So, you know, sometimes you want to share the wealth with the honor. But I understand it is very, very close, and Sale does have the edge in some of those things. Scotty,
is it never enough for Yankee fans, though? It's like, you know, Luis Severino has jumped to one of the best pitchers in the game. But, you know, if you don't get – he doesn't start the All-Star game, too, you're not satisfied?
Fair enough, Scotty. Just remember that we're going into football season, and when your Seattle Seahawks are talked about ad nauseum here on the Roto Experts in the Morning, I'll be making some of the same points. That's all, Scotty. But
that's okay.
We only have a couple.
You could do it with the Mets right now if you want.
Well, the Mets are a dumpster fire. They even had a literal dumpster fire in their stadium earlier this season. Scott, we only got a couple of minutes left.
There was a conversation about whether Nemo should be an All-Star or not, and I kind of lean towards no. As good as
All
he's
right.
been.
All right, fair enough. So you mentioned, though, earlier in the show, Scotty, that, you know, when you were growing up and stuff like that, that the introductions were kind of the best part, right? You get to see your guys going out there and on the national stage receive their kind of just due. I think a couple of things have kind of been the detriment to the All-Star game. You know, one, obvious to me, interleague play hurt the All-Star game. I think interleague play is a great thing for Major League Baseball, but it did hurt the All-Star game, right? Because now you have access to the stars from the other leagues. You do see them playing against your home team a little bit. And then, of course, after the tie in Milwaukee, you know, they've gone through all sorts of other things to try to, quote unquote, make it count. Scotty, on a scale of 1 to 10, how interested are you in the All-Star game?
2.
Okay. On a scale of 1 to 10, Scotty, how interested are you in the Home Run Derby?
1.
Interesting. Okay. Let me see if I can help that. I have some ideas for some other, like, you know, all-star game festivities, like a weekend kind of thing that I would love to see. Okay. You know how in the NBA they do the three-point contest and the slam dunk contest, stuff like that. NHL, they do fastest skater, the breakouts. I think the home run derby has some potential. But check this out. I would love to see all the fastest runners in Major League Baseball. Line up Billy Hamilton, Trey Turner, you know, D. Gordon. Put them all on first base and put them on the clock, maybe going first to third or first to home. I would love to see who Major League Baseball's fastest man is, Scotty. Would you have any interest in that, and who do you think would be the winner?
I think I'd have more interest in that than what goes on now.
Maybe okay,
because
good.
Of what's new, but I find it interesting. And after watching him in person, I think Malik Smith would have a good shot.
Interesting. Okay, so maybe we'd run him out there. Here's another event that I would love to see. Scotty,
I like
remember,
that.
Remember about 10, 15 years ago, there was that like instructional video that was like sponsored by Fred McGriff, where the guys would be taking that crow hop and like having to hit the garbage can at home? I say line up all the best arms in right field, right? Put that little garbage can or whatever it is at third base or at home, have them crow hop, and have them show off their arms from the outfield. I would rather see that. You know, imagine if back in the day, like Larry Walker and Ichiro and Jeff Francoeur were all uncorking it from right field, throwing lasers. Jesse Barfield nailing them at third base.
Yasiel Puig doing it right now.
I think that would be cool, Scotty. I also think it would be cool. We only got a minute left. We'll talk about it maybe a little bit more. I would want to see pitch command. Put people – it's not about trying to throw out your arm, but put targets on the corners of the strike zone and see who can hit them, like, with their breaking balls even. Or have all these big pulls.
I think maybe the most intense baseball fan might like that. I think the problem with the All-Star game, for me, the biggest problem is when it's played, because guys who have big first halves make the team. And
Ubaldo Jimenez.
Like Jason Vargas last year, you know. It's just I don't like the timing of it. That's another problem.
All right, fair enough. And then I also thought, what about like a beat the shift game? Get all these lefty pull hitters and force them to go oppo and see who could actually do it the best.
That's only for the most diehard baseball fan. I like the idea, though, of like,
you like the
throwing
fastest
from
man?
The outfield. And the fastest man is something that's very interesting, I think.
Yeah, think about the superstars. Remember back in the 70s, they used to have like Darryl Green or whatever racing everybody?
Yeah.
It's interesting. The Midsummer Classic, or get on and
or
poppin'.
A competition to see who can throw 100 over or over.
Right, but we also don't want to, you know, burn out people's arms that people wouldn't participate. But we'll talk about it a little bit more. The Midsummer Night Classic tonight. Hey, Scotty, have a good rest of the day. We'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll get more into those tight end rankings as well. Roto Experts in the morning. Jake Seely coming up.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back. Roto Experts in the morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Spitting Statistician and the All-In Kid holding you down for the next hour here on a Tuesday. It is the Midsummer Classic. Later tonight, we'll chop it up about the Home Run Derby, about our platform for enhancing all-star festivities and what we can expect a little bit later on. But we also got to get you ready for fantasy football. And so that's why we have the number one accuracy ranker in the business, my man, the All-In Kid, Jake Seely. How you doing this morning, Jake?
I'm doing good.
Doing good. That's what I like to hear. Jake, we'll talk about our home run picks a little bit later on in the show. But I want to ask you first off, I mean, you spent some time with Mike Tomlin over the weekend, and we were talking about, you know, kind of the deadline for Le'Veon Bell. Was at 4 p.m. yesterday, or play under the franchise tag. There were no long-term deals reached, whether it was with Ziggy Ansah, whether it was DeMarcus Lawrence over there in Dallas, or with Le'Veon Bell, in Pittsburgh. There is, however, Jake, reports that The Pittsburgh Steelers offered Le'Veon Bell a 5-year, $70 million deal in negotiations. That would have been a $14 million a year kind of contract. The franchise tag that Bell is playing under is just north of that at like 14 and a quarter, I believe. Right now, Jake, the league's highest paid running back is Devontae Freeman at about $8.25 million a year. This would have been, you know, $5-6 million more than that. I guess my question for you, Jake, is this a smart business decision by Le'Veon Bell? Do you think he will actually get that much, $14 million for a running back at the age of 27 or 28 in the open market? The other thing I think about this, Jake, is I actually think this is just pure strategy on Lev Bell's side, because I think they're syncing up his time in Pittsburgh with Big Ben, to be quite honest. If you're Le'Veon Bell and you're in the prime of your career, why would you want to stay in Pittsburgh once Big Ben moves on and kind of hit the retool or the reset button? What do you think is going down here behind the scenes in Pittsburgh with Lev Bell?
I mean, I can only guess. I mean, I don't think anybody really knows it, but outside the fact that the only thing I could see of him not wanting to take that contract is the guaranteed money, because I think that's more the issue than anything, because Saquon Barkley is going to get more guaranteed money than that contract would have. Like, that's not a joke. Saquon Barkley, the number 4 draft pick, is going to, when he signs his deal, which still hasn't happened yet, he's going to be averaging about 8 per year, which the average is not the same as what Le'Veon Bell was going to get, but he's going to get 30-31 guaranteed. That's the crazy part. They were only giving him 27 almost guaranteed. So if that's the point that he's trying to make, then I understand it. You know, I understand the fact that, hey, you know, I want a little bit more money than the rookie that's coming out in this year's draft class, and if a rookie gets drafted in the top 5 next year, it's going to happen again. So I understand that, and honestly, I don't think he's going to get more in the offseason as yearly. No, I think he'll get what he's getting now, but I don't think he'll get more yearly, but I think somebody will give him more guaranteed, and I think that's what he's holding out for.
Okay, fair enough, and that makes sense. Listen, especially at the running back position, we have seen Lev Bell go down with knee injuries before. We know this is a violent game, and we know, Jake, we've discussed this before, NFL contracts are written on toilet paper. The team can rip it up, whatever. So what we've been talking about, even when it came to like the quarterback deals and how what people are pushing more and more for when they have the leverage is more guaranteed money. So that could be what Lev Bell is looking for. There was reports, though, yesterday, alongside this, there was a number of reports that I want to touch base with you on around this Le'Veon Bell issue. Jake, his agent came out and not only said, you know, this might be his last year in Pittsburgh, like I said, potentially syncing it up with Big Ben. But the other thing was, I think it was his agent who said on a Schefter podcast potentially that he may hold out into the season. He may hold out into the season. Later on, Lev Bell on social media was like, nah, this is going to be my best year ever. And I would think it needs to be that way, right, Jake? I mean, if he's going to hit the open market, he needs to do so coming off a good season, so there are no doubts. Obviously, there will be a market for Lev Bell. But did that tough talk in negotiation give you any cause to worry that Lev Bell may miss regular season games?
No, not at all. He's not gonna cost himself nearly $8 million. He's not that stupid.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. Let me ask it to you this way. I thought it was curious. You know, sometimes teams have these leaks, you know, and kind of create the narrative out there in the press. I thought it was curious, Jake, that on this same day, there was a lot of buzz and a couple of beat reporters talking about how strong James Conner looked in spring practices and that he has the ability. I think the quote was like, he can be a solid every down back in this league. And so I just think it's interesting timing how when the contract negotiations are not, you know, kind of crossing the finish line after a deadline, that they're still starting to talk up, kind of hype the other guy in the running back room who maybe could be an heir apparent down the road. Let me ask it to you this way, Jake, if you're a Lev Bell owner, let's say in a dynasty league, and I ask because, oh, I am, is James Conner one of those handcuffs that you should really try to target, but, you know, contract situation, injury history, or even potentially as a starting back for the Steelers next year? Talk to me about James Conner.
Uh, I, don't think you should at all, actually. I'm selling high on James Conner. I said the same thing last night on Twitter. I'd sell high. The fact is James Conner, in my opinion, is not somebody that's capable of being a lead running back in the NFL. I think that he's fine, and I think it's a great story. I think he does have some talent, but I would sell high because people are going crazy right now in Dynasty, and that's when you need to sell high. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity that they could have this next season. And the draft alone, the draft is going to have players. You could go, hey, if Michigan State has one in L.J. Scott, they could get another Michigan State running back if they wanted. I would love to see Montgomery follow them, but I don't think it's going to happen. I mentioned they could get Harris from Alabama. They could get Anderson from Oklahoma. I mean, there's options in the draft next year that they could get if that are better suited and with better fits for the NFL and for this team. So I think Connor's fine in what he is, and I just think he's a career backup. So people are probably going to give you RB2 value in Dynasty, and I'd sell immediately if so.
Interesting, Jake. Maybe I should do that. I do, in fact, have him for this idea, just in case something would happen with Lev Bell. But maybe I should think about selling high on them. Thanks, Jake, for the insight. That's why you're the number one accuracy ranker in the business. Jake, listen, training camps for rookies are opening some places this week. Veterans will be reporting somewhat next week. So that means people are out there talking again, okay? And there are a couple teams where I saw some news and notes and buzz that I want to get your thoughts on. The first is the Philadelphia Eagles. They were talking in Philly a little bit yesterday. I saw buzz on one guy that was kind of trending positively and one guy that wasn't necessarily trending negatively, but words of caution. In Philadelphia, I heard one report that says that Jay Ajayi may be in line for more carries this year. We understand Darren Sproles is there, so we talked about him a little bit yesterday, I believe, as well, when we did the Philadelphia Eagles. We talked about what that means for Corey Clement. So I would love to get your take on the running back room there in Philly. We talked about this yesterday, I acknowledge, but this idea that maybe Ajayi may get a bump in carries. And then on the flip side, Doug Peterson is saying that he is unsure if Carson Wentz will be ready for week one. Now, to your point, Jake, all the reports we've seen so far have been positive. We've seen, like, you know, Instagram workout videos and things of that nature. He's not saying that he won't be ready for week one. Peterson is just more saying, like, this will be up to the medical staff, blah, blah, blah. So talk to me about these two bits of news. Does it change any of your expectations? One, about the availability of Carson Wentz, and two, I would say about what is Corey Clement's role if, in fact, Jay Ajayi gets more carries and we know that Darren Sproles has a nice little niche carved out in the passing game, Jake?
Well, no, we talked about the running backs yesterday. Nothing's changed.
Yeah.
It's the same exact thing that we talked about yesterday. There's nothing.
Hearing that Ajayi may get more carries isn't going to.
No. Okay. I told you yesterday. It's Doug Peterson doesn't go with a bell cow. He never has. I'm not going to. No. Nothing's going to change. And we get week three of the preseason. Maybe we'll talk then, but nothing's changing. I don't care what somebody says today and somebody says tomorrow. We do this every damn offseason, not you. It's just we do this all the time. We have everything. We sit there and we project going forward. And then all these beat reporters that I continue to say, no jack squat more than we do. They're projecting what they think just as much as we are. And we get caught up in it every single year. And people make mistakes in fantasy because they're listening to beat reporters who are trying to make guesses just like we are. And you know what? Sometimes we know more, sometimes they know more. But the fact is I'm not changing anything as of today. With Carson Wentz, we've always kind of expected this. We've always, the worst case scenario is he's not ready until week three. Best case scenario is ready week one. But as I continue to say the same thing with like a Jameis Winston, his situation is a little tougher because his bye week is right at the beginning of the season. So it's technically almost like it's four games only, but you're missing four of the first 5 weeks. So he's not draftable really. But the point being is it's easier to find a replacement at the beginning. Like, I'm still going to draft Carson Wentz in the eighth round if he's there. I can manage a quarterback for the first 2 weeks. I can play Dak Prescott for 2 weeks.
Right. You play Ryan Fitzpatrick for 2 weeks. Who knows? Maybe even
Dak Prescott for 2 weeks.
All right, fair enough. And obviously, as you said, listen, Jake, you know, the beat writers have their access, their opinions, their analysis. So do we. And you know what's great? Sometimes we get to put it all on the scale and evaluate who is the most accurate. And when we do so, the answer becomes the all-in kid. That's why you listen to Roto Experts in the morning. That's why you go ahead and get the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. It gives you all the rankings. It gives you great articles and insights. It gives you projections. It gives you customizable tiers. stuff like that. And you can enter the promo code ALLINKID at checkout and get a special discount. Jake, what about over in Carolina? I saw a couple of pieces of news about players in Carolina. Again, one kind of on a positive buzz, best shape of his life, going to contribute right away. And that is wide receiver out of Maryland, DJ Moore. They're saying that he looks good in camp, that he's ready to contribute. I think he's going to personally fall victim, Jake, to the fantasy herd. You know, there's other mouths to feed there between Funchess, a returning Olsen. Obviously, we know that McCaffrey might get something like 70, 80 catches out of the backfield. So I wonder how much is left for DJ Moore. But then on the other side, they're saying, similar to our conversations around Alvin Kamara not necessarily absorbing all of the Mark Ingram load, I saw reports out there, don't necessarily expect Christian McCaffrey to get a bigger load. Remember, they don't want to subject him to that, a la Kamara, a la Chris Thompson, a la Tariq Cohen, and some others, and that's why they brought in C.J. Anderson. Talk to me about your opinion on these pieces of buzz, or at least beat reporters' comments, let's say. DJ Moore looking good and ready to contribute, and CMC maybe not getting a bigger load. What does that mean for the pie and the slices of the pie, Jake, in Carolina?
What did I say when we talked about the Panthers the first time?
I don't know. Repeat it, Jake. You never know. Someone may have not been listening to that episode,
Jake. I'm asking you.
Oh, you're asking me. You said you didn't think DJ Moore. Yeah, you were saying you did not think DJ Moore would, in fact, pop off right away, that he might be a better guy for the real team instead of the fantasy team. And, Jake, as you know, we had a conversation about Christian McCaffrey that ultimately wound up in silence. So I don't know if we want to go back to that per se. But I believe you thought that DJ Moore would be better for the real team than the fantasy team. And you do, in fact, like Funchess, I believe.
Pretty much, and it's exactly the same as of today. DJ Moore, it's a great fit, but the fact is Cam Newton's not throwing for 4,000 yards, and Christian McCaffrey is going to continue to be Christian McCaffrey and wasn't going to get more touches, and he never was going to get more touches because they brought in C.J. Anderson, who is probably – actually, he is better than Jonathan Stewart is at this point in his career. And nothing's changed from that. I don't care. Again, whatever anybody says means jack squat. It's July. It's actually the beginning.
Fair enough. Oh, but Jake, before it was June and it meant jack squat, it's got to mean a little bit more
June and July. No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean anything.
All right. Will it matter? Let me ask you this, Jake. When will it start mattering? Will it start mattering? Let's say the beat reporters are there and, like, actual camp has begun. And when camp has begun and we start seeing things in practice, things of that nature, will it matter then? I'm just trying to get a read on when.
No, they're still doing the same thing right now. I don't care what they say. The beat reporters don't know anything. I said this, I don't know how many times I have to say this. The only time they know more than us is if the coach specifically says, this is what's going to happen. And in that case, everybody knows it because the coach actually said it and they have it recorded.
Okay, fair enough. And we talked about LeSean McCoy. You know, Jake, you said you wouldn't change your ranks until, like, something the NFL actually declared, things of that nature, right? So I have one other thing that is an actual thing that took place yesterday, and that is that Kenneth Dixon was fully cleared. He's not on the PUP list, okay? Talk to me about this Baltimore running back room. We know we have Alex Collins. There's Buck Allen there as well. Now, listen, Jake, you and I both agree that the Baltimore Ravens offense is not, like, you know, going to scare anybody. We didn't necessarily, I think we both agreed to take the under on the Baltimore Ravens when we were talking about the AFC North. We don't necessarily think that pie is that big. I know a lot of people do have Alex Collins, though, as kind of like a back-end RB2. I'm worried, Jake, that Kenneth Dixon coming back doesn't necessarily move the needle, but does just enough to make this a committee and impact the value of Alex Collins. Do you see it in a similar way, or is this does Kenneth Dixon not move the needle for you because of his injury history and things of that nature? I just think the team kind of likes Kenneth Dixon.
Okay, I like Kenneth Dixon because he's the most talented running back on that team. That's the issue. Is like Alex Collins looked very good, and some of the metrics tell us that he performed very well. But if you watch him, he's still not that impressive of a running back, and that's the concern here.
I mean, Seattle cut him for a reason, right?
Yeah, if you're talking about ability, Kenneth Dixon still has the most. And the biggest concern wasn't just the pop. There's a concern, I guess, with that concern that he was, you know, there you go. A beat reported 3 weeks ago, and this is what everybody got concerned about this, is he left them off his projected 53-man roster for the Ravens. And so now everybody was like, oh, Kenneth Dixon, I don't know if we even want to draft him and all that type of stuff. Again, it's just a beat reporter making guesses because he wasn't sure if he was healthy. So the fact is...
But isn't Kenneth this an Dixon, actual piece of the puzzle, an actual fact that he has already been cleared at this point? Like, that's a legitimate fact,
that's,
Jake.
That's what I was getting to.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
So, yeah, I was getting there. So the point being is that we now have that he's cleared and not have to worry about starting the season on the PUP. And if he is, as I was just saying and we were talking about, he is the most talented running back, which is a threat to Alex Collins because he's a threat to anybody on a team, really. Unless he's behind one of the top 10 or so running backs in the NFL, he's going to be a threat for touches if he's healthy. A very big concern with him, whether or not it comes down to health. But as of now... He is, and I think at least you're looking at somebody who's going to force some part of a timeshare. It'll just be up to him of whether or not that you know, his performance, whether that happens this year. But I think there's a threat for it, absolutely.
So if there is a threat for it, it's something to think about, especially as you evaluate Alex Collins and like where he falls on this kind of workload spectrum with all of those other starting running backs in the NFL. All right, Jake, we've been doing our team-by-team previews. We were in the NFC East. We talked about the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles yesterday. Today, I want to talk a little bit about the Washington football team, Jake, because then afterwards we'll be able to transition to the Midsummer Classic, which is also taking place in our nation's capital. Now, granted, Jake, with the Washington football team, we have talked about, you know, a lot of these players a lot. That's what we have to do in June and July. We got to fill time and project and speculate and analyze, but some of this will be recurring. Let me first ask you about this quarterback change that happened in Washington. We've talked about this a little bit before, Jake, I acknowledge, but everyone's assumption, right, is that Alex Smith is something like a check down Charlie, that he's averse to throwing the ball downfield, although I would say in the first month of the season last year, that certainly was not the case. And when that wasn't the case, Alex Smith was being talked about as a fringe MVP candidate at the very beginning of the season last year. He now moves over to Washington, right? Now, do you expect some kind of short-term check-down offense? Is this going to be a lot of Chris Thompson, a lot of Jamison Crowder? Or do you think he stretches the field a little bit more and that favors a guy like Josh Dotson or what I believe is an under kind of analyzed signing in the offseason, Paul Richardson, on the other side? How do you think Alex Smith moving to Washington works for this scheme, this fit, and ultimately these pass catchers?
Well, the fact is he's not a check down quarterback. That's a misnomer. As we already talked about that before, and you can go to the article on the website, and there's evidence. There's plenty of evidence. You just look at the play last year. People just have these narratives, and they stick to it, and they make these assumptions. The fact is also, though, if you look at the numbers, he is quite accurate and very efficient when throwing to his slot receiver. So obviously that helps Jamison Crowder. He's also still good with his outside receivers. What it comes down to is who's going to step up. Josh Doxson was top 10 in the second half of last year in red zone targets. Is that going to translate this year? You're going to see more consistency because Kirk Cousins actually struggles with his outside when throwing outside with accuracy, with yards per attempt and all that type of stuff. So can Alex Smith help Josh Doxson? Or is it going to be Paul Richardson, who's flashed plenty of talent at times when he was with Seattle? It's just whether or not he's going to do anything with the Redskins, who, you know, they gave him a significant contract to just not come in and be like, hey, you're a third wide receiver. So I think there's competition for Josh Doxson. It's going to come down to there's three scenarios. And as of today, this is one of those ones similar to the Green Bay Packers running backs. I'll take Crowder and PPR as my wide receiver three, no problem. I will take Doxson or Richardson, whoever's cheaper, because as of today, there's a scenario where both of them, eat into each other's value, especially if Jordan Reed is healthy. They're going to eat into each other's value. There's a scenario where Josh Doxson, his talent finally plays out and that red zone success starts to translate from those targets. Or there's a scenario where he continues his inconsistency from last year and Paul Richardson comes in and takes over as the number two and he's the one to own. So when it comes to drafting those two, like I said, I will take whoever's going later in drafts. And as of today, it's Paul Richardson because Paul Richardson is almost going for free right now.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jake. You know, we talk about this all the time, right? With when there's whether, like you mentioned, the Green Bay running back situation, the Cleveland running back situation, which we have discussed ad nauseum, and other kind of examples where we don't know and it might be close, we tend to take the guy who's going later in drafts right now because that is what represents more value. I made the same point, I think it was with the Los Angeles Rams wide receivers, you know, how I expect all three of them to be similar, so give me Cup instead of Brandon Cooks, that sort of thing. I agree with you, given the potential value there, Paul Richardson may represent that over Josh Dotson. I mean, Jake, I saw a couple times up in Seattle where Russell Wilson would just chuck it up and Paul Richardson would wind up coming down with it. So maybe he is that down the field threat on the other side of the field for Josh Dotson. As you mentioned, though, Jake, both of these guys, Dotson and Richardson, could open up the middle of the field a little bit for Jamison Crowder, for Chris Thompson, but also for these tight ends, Jake, you know, it's almost... It's almost like projecting LeSean McCoy at this point, trying to project Jordan Reed. I know that right now, everyone says he's okay, that he's looking healthy, all that good stuff, right? And I almost, you know, I almost slipped there because he's so frustrating for owners. Jordan Reed is pretty much like, you know, is injury prone, is not dependable. Are you going to have any shares of Jordan Reed, or better ask, like, at what point... You know, because there's a value for everything, right? It's all relative. At what point would you be like, I maybe need to start considering Jordan Reed? And also, would you ever consider late round flyer a guy like Vernon Davis, almost assuming that Jordan Reed might miss some time?
I'm not really drafting Vernon Davis because I'm not drafting somebody whose value is solely based on somebody else being hurt. I'm not. There's other tight ends I'd rather take, like a Vance McDonald or Ricky Seals-Jones or somebody like that. When it comes to Jordan Reed, I've been doing this for a month, honestly. I have no problem taking Jordan Reed when he's going in around 9, 10, 11 because the fact is he addressed the toe. And he had surgery, and he's got that taken care of. That was the biggest issue with him for the past 2 years. 2 years ago, he had the issue and played through it. Last year, he decided not to have surgery and play through it. He's had other issues there, but a lot of times, too, is we know this from baseball. We've seen it with players. We see football do the same thing. When you have an injury somewhere, you overcompensate somewhere else, which can lead to an injury. And it's had that happen with Jordan Reed. Granted, he's very injury-prone at this point, but he has that issue taken care of. He actually addressed it. He's 100% as of today. So for Jordan Reed, who is top three for tight ends when he's healthy, and especially he's going to be out there with Alex Smith now, I am going to draft Jordan Reed if he's going to go that late because everybody wants to take Trey Burton and George Kittles and all the rest of them. Well, guess what? For the risk they have of trying to step up and be what people think they are, Jordan Reed is that. Jordan Reed's 10 times that. He just needs to stay healthy.
Yeah, health is definitely the question with Jordan Reed. But as you say, Jake, if you tell me right now that Jordan Reed plays 15 games, you know, I'll show you a tight end with 75 catches, with 800 yards, and with like 6 or 7 touchdowns, and that gets you, like you just said, definitively in the top five. So while I still believe, Jake, maybe it's like that post-traumatic stress for me because I've been nailed with Jordan Reed, you know, before, you know, so it's like hard for me to want to sack up and do it again. But if you go ahead and take, you know, whatever risk that is, if he is on the field, he can be an elite tight end for you. Jake, let's talk about the running back room real quick here in Washington. Listen, I'm going to tell you something, Jake. I actually believe, I'm not going to go so far as to say a fugazi, but I think relatively speaking, I'm not going to have many shares of Chris Thompson this year, Jake. I mean, Chris Thompson's numbers were amazing last year. I give you that. And in PPR formats, sure, love me some Chris Thompson. But let's not forget, Jake, Chris Thompson was doing some of this last year, literally like as the lead back. They were giving him like early down run, and that is not going to be the case with the rookie Darius Geis in the backfield this year. I think Thompson returns more to the role that the Washington football team wants him in, which is this pass-catching back. And so, sure, if you're judging him on just that, I'm with you, but don't expect some of the production that we saw last year out of Thompson when he was like the last man left standing before his own injury. Jake, do you agree that the presence of Geis kind of compromises some of Thompson's value and moves him right back into that kind of straight PPR role like he previously inhabited?
Yeah, that's what we were saying a little while ago with the situation we were talking about, the rookies. Darius Geis, is a better pass catcher than people realize, because just like Leonard Fournette before him, he's coming from LSU that doesn't pass to the running backs that much, because I don't know why LSU still continues to do that.
They don't pass well to anybody, Jake. They had Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry as their wide receiver.
But I didn't say pass well. I said pass much. So okay. You know, if you want to say both, then that's fine. But yeah, the fact is they just don't utilize the running backs that much. So the fact is Darius Geis is a great running back. He is going to command the lead of that backfield, and it's going to be close to workhorse value. Chris Thompson is going to be theoretic, which is fine in PPR as an RB3, but that's what he's going to be also, because the Redskins don't want to get him killed like they did last year. There's something to be said for that. I don't know how many times we have to go through up this like the dog and pony show of it, but when running backs aren't built that big, teams know, and you see this happen all the time, because the ones that do end up getting hurt don't want 20 touches for somebody that's built that way. And it just comes down to you're likely to get hurt. And it's just it's the rigors of the NFL, man. So the theoretic role is great. I'll take him as my RB3 in PPR. That's a very valuable. And there'll be plenty of weeks where he's an RB2. And there'll be a couple weeks where he's an RB1 at the end of the season. Heck, he might even crack the RB2 tier in PPR. But that's more PPR, and this is my RB3. I don't want to saddle him as my RB2.
Fair enough. Thompson could be a great flex play in PPR settings, but we're comparing him similar to some of these other guys who are a little bit slight and don't want to kind of get them killed. We talked about it with Alvin Kamara. You mentioned Theo Riddick. I bring up a guy like Tariq Cohen. They just don't want to overuse them. They want to keep him. Christian McCaffrey, we just talked about him as well. They don't want to kind of use him up so that he can still be as explosive in what we call, generally speaking, Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe more like the 15 touches a game, being kind of a nice number that they would be happy about for Thompson, McCaffrey, Kamara, and some of these other guys, correct?
No, I think 15 is even a little bit much.
Okay, so maybe 12 especially to 15, something of that nature.
No, we're talking about Thompson. You're talking about Theo Riddick. That's more like 10 to 12.
Okay, fair enough. But in general, they are managing the workload to keep them fresh for what they do so well. When we come back, we're going to shift gears. Jake, we almost had it with the home run derby call. Your guy Muncy did well. My guy Schwarber did well. We'll chat it up about that and a couple other things around baseball when we come back. It's Roto Experts in the Morning. Jake Seeley and Dane Martinez. Let's go.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dane Martinez, Speeds and Spitting Statistician with the all-in kid, Jake Seeley, the number one accuracy ranker in the business. So, especially in the next couple of months, when we're getting you ready for fantasy football, you need to listen to what the all-in kid is saying, especially unless for some reason, if you're allergic to money, if you're allergic to trophies, if you're allergic to championship belts, then do not listen. Then go to another station right now. But if Seeley, Jake, yes, we were talking about the Washington football team. Chris Thompson played 10 games last year, okay, before being out with injury. Chris Thompson amassed 294 rushing yards last year. Before the injury. Now, we don't think he's going to be running the ball as much, but hopefully he plays 16 games. Is that about the right number of rushing yards and all-purpose yards? I'm doing a little bit of quick math here. He wound up just over 800 yards combined in all-purpose yards last year. That was in 10 games, but given the fact that Geis is there and maybe an evolving offense, do you expect him to pretty much be around the same all-purpose yards this year?
Yeah, I'm just under 800 actually.
Because that's a flex, right? That's a flex back. That's not PPR. Like Yeah, in PPR, that's what I'm saying. You know, because sure, I'll give him 55, 60 catches. I know I'm reinforcing it, Jake. I'm agreeing with you. I'm reinforcing it. That's all. I'm not disputing it, Jake. I'm saying, like, this is pretty much where he's going to be. I'm helping clarify for people that, listen, don't expect what you saw last year out of Chris Thompson. He's going right back into that role.
I didn't think I was that confusing.
Well, you know, you never know. Sometimes people wake up a little bit later than others. Jake, if you go on over to mybookie.ag, you will see right now that the season win total for the Washington football team is 7. Jake, I think that's a decent line. I'm not touching this one at all. What do you think?
If I am, I'm betting the under.
I hear you, but, you know, I mean, 7-9 seems real possible for the Washington football team. Jake, I'll tell you this. I agree with you. When we passed on Washington today, or maybe take a little bit of the under, we passed on Philly just because that number at 10.5 was so big. I'm going to tell you something. The other two teams in this division that we're going to talk about later this week, I do believe are legitimate opportunities to bet, Jake. The Cowboys over-under is at 8.5. The Giants over-under is at 6.5. You know, I think I know which way you might go. We'll talk about those the rest of the way throughout the week, but those are bets that I, in fact, would make. If you want to know where the Spitting Statistician and the All-In Kid will go on those, you got to keep it locked to Roto Experts in the morning, 8 to 9 a.m. with the All-In Kid and the Spitting Statistician. Jake, yesterday we made some picks for the All-Star game. For the Home Run Derby, right? You, first of all, you had two picks. I only had one. You took Muncy and Aguilar. I took Schwarber.
No, I didn't have two picks to win it. I had two picks. I picked the final.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Well, my guy was in the final, Kyle Schwarber. I thought it was fun, though, Jake. I thought it was fun. I'm telling you, I like this format. Clock counting down and the timeouts and stuff. Here's another thing I want to ask you about, Jake. I liked the bats last night. Did you see the designs of some of those bats? Harper with the American flag. I think Aguilar had, like, I think it was the Venezuelan flag on it. You know, everybody had a little bit of panache to their bats. Why is that not allowed in regular season baseball, Jake?
I'm with you. I was talking about it last night, saying the exact same thing you were. I don't know why this isn't something that they do all the time. And it's funny because I actually noticed this the night before or the day before. Was it the night before? It was either the night before or the day before the All-Star break, because I was watching whatever game I was watching. The person broke his bat and he went to the dugout and came out with a completely different bat. That was the way that it was designed with the sheen on it and the darkness. Mm-hmm. It looked aluminum. And I was like, that's a really cool looking bat. And it's because it was kind of silverish looking. It was just really cool looking. And that's where I started thinking about it. I was like, why don't, you know, is this where we're going? Are we going to have some like cooler looking design bats? And then last night, to your point, like, this should be like goalie masks in hockey. Like, you should be able to design your bats. Obviously, it's going to cost more money, but if you're a star of that level and the you know, the bat company, I'm sure
they probably will be just fine making some bats for a professional hitter.
Because you know what? I guarantee you some kids will start buying them and playing with wooden bats that look like that.
You darn right. And here's the other thing, Jake, just as another layer for it. On Mother's Day, they're cool with everyone using pink bats. You know, on Father's Day, they're cool with the baby blue bats. They're cool selling extra jerseys on Memorial Day with the camouflage numbers. They're cool with the stars and stripes all July 4th week, basically. And, you know, and having those alternate jerseys. And that's all the sell. So to your point, Jake, you're telling me a young little Bryce Harper fan wouldn't be out there right now trying to get his bat? I love the Max Muncy one with the Dodgers colors, things like that. I mean, like, this is a missed opportunity, I think, on a number of levels, Jake. We talk about how fans, and young fans specifically, are moving away from baseball. Like, why aren't they doing this? I would allow it on the cleats as well, you know what I mean? It's very weird to me when baseball decides to be kind of the uniform police.
That's getting a little risky, though.
The cleats?
Yeah, same thing as football. You start getting a little risky with that because then, you know, you can
part of the uniform, quote-unquote?
Yeah, that's always...
Political
that's
statements?
Always Oh, no, I was just thinking the uniforms aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. And then here's the other thing I want to get into, Jake. Remember when we were talking about, like, your batting practice pitcher and whoever agrees it? Well, Bryce Harper had his dad. And first of all, his dad looked yoked up, didn't he? His dad looked like he'd been in the gym recently. I thought that was interesting.
His beard looked fake.
Yeah, it's true. It looked like it was one of those, the same thing that, like, LeBron uses on his hairline, right? But here's the thing. I don't know if you saw this, Jake, and maybe I'm just, you know, crying over spilt milk because I had Kyle Schwarber in the final, right? But they were making the point that the pitcher could not throw the next ball until the last pop-up, like, landed. And I'm going to tell you something. When Bryce Harper was down by, like, 6 home runs with 45 seconds left to go, his dad was just rapid-fire throwing him, and there was no regard for the rules on that one. But all in all, I like the format. I like the competition. I like the ability to kind of hit that walk-off, shall we say. What were some of your big headline takeaways from the Derby, Jake?
It's a Harper Derby. I don't have a headline takeaway. It's just fun. We already talked. It was fun. It was fun to see him. It was fun to see him go down to the wire with the time and then have the extra time to be able to. Like, that's fun. I mean, this is what we were talking about yesterday, is this format that they changed. I wasn't expecting much of it when they did it 2 years ago. This is now the third year. So I wasn't expecting much of it, but it was the best decision they've made in a long time when it comes to baseball. It's just, it makes it so much more entertaining. The fact is, though, the whole waiting until the ball lands. There was players before. I'm not doing the same. This happened. That has happened every single year so far. The same thing happened last year. The same thing happened the year before. Somebody ends up ignoring it, or somebody just starts pitching and they don't do anything about it. I don't know why they enforced a rule. I don't know. To be honest with you, just get rid of it, because let them go as fast as they want, because they're going to get tired out anyway if they go that route. So just who cares of when it lands? That's an annoying. No, that's even worse for the fans anyway, because nobody wants to sit there and wait for a towering pop fly to the barely shallow center field to land. Just go ahead and pitch. I thought you were going to say the bigger thing was his dad had almost ruined it for him, because he was throwing so many.
He did. Throwing inside. He was yanking some pitches. I mean,
not even on the plate. I mean, just completely balls almost hitting Harper.
Like he was throwing sliders down and in, right?
Like, I don't know what. I don't know if he was getting his adrenaline pumping and he started overthrowing, but
I think the pressure got to dad,
He was definitely. I was sitting there. I was like, oh my God, he's going to ruin this for him.
I thought that too. I was like, oh snap, his dad is. And you know, like I said, yesterday I had Kyle Schwarber, right? So I had a little bit of a vested interest in this. Hey, Jake, this is completely non-baseball, but you know what else struck me watching portions of that? A lot of construction going on in D.C., huh? When you saw, like, those fly balls, going, and I like seeing the backdrop, the skyline. A lot of construction, a lot of cranes in the background. Did you notice that as well, Jake, or no?
Yeah, well, I've been up there plenty of times.
Yeah.
So they're doing a lot of work today. They have been, and they've been building up that area around the stadium. The stadium just 5 years ago, let alone when it first, there was nothing out there. It was almost like a shipyard area. There's an area where you can go and actually get food after the game, and it's all in like containers. Like, it's like a container park. It's kind of like
an industrial area of the city.
But it used to, like I said, though, they're building it up. It didn't.
Gotcha.
They've got like a whole like food area that's kind of starting to be built up and more, I don't want to say millennial, but like, what's the word? Gentrified? I don't know, whatever you want to call it.
Sure, sure, sure. I gotcha.
But yeah, they've been doing that to the city for a while now.
It's evolving. It did strike me though, like on this, like, usually like you see the skyline, you see the background, right? You see the scenic backdrop. And I just noticed, I was like, oh, a lot of construction going on over there. So I thought it was interesting. Jake, tonight though, the Midsummer Classic does get going. You got Max Scherzer of the Washington Nationals on the hill for the National League. And you got Chris Sale on the hill for the American League. Jake, did they get the American League starter right? I mean, granted, I'm a Yankee fan, but I thought Severino had a very interesting case. I mean, if you look at their numbers, the ERA, the whip, Sale has a very slight advantage in some of those. The strikeout numbers are there as well. But this is an exact repeat of the starting pitching matchup from last year. Am I just being a Yankee fan and crying over spilt milk that I thought Severino could have deserved the start tonight?
Pretty much.
Yeah,
all the Yankees fans are, and all the Yankees fans need to shut the hell up, because they're entitled a little. Fact is, Chris Sale was the better pitcher at the half. Chris Sale, if you want to just take biases out of it, he has a higher WAR despite having 4 less wins. Done. No conversation here. It's over. He's the better pitcher at the All-Star break. If anybody wants to complain, he complained about the fact that Max Scherzer got the home start over Jacob deGrom, who's actually a better pitcher than all of them. So that's what it really comes down to. But he admitted himself, and Jacob deGrom says, you know what? We're in his park. Right. Scherzer should get the start. I understand it. Well, you know what? I don't care. He's right. So, you know, it's the home park. That's the benefit of getting to play in your home park. If you make the All-Star game and you're pitching that good, Scherzer gets the start. Get the hell over it, people.
Yeah, sure. I completely agree with you. Matt Harvey, I think, got the same thing when it was in Citi Field. What was that, 2 or 3 years ago? And if you look at the numbers again, Sale, 2.23 ERA to Severino's 2.31. Sale with a 0.9 whip, Severino with a 1.01. And Sale, obviously, with 188 strikeouts and only 129 innings, about 40 more than Luis Severino. You make a good point.
So where's the case for Severino?
I think the numbers are close, Jake. The numbers are close.
No, there's no case. He's behind in every category and getting destroyed in strikeouts. And
except so wins, the only but yes.
And wins mean nothing, honestly.
Fair enough. And DeGrom, though, like you said, DeGrom coming into the All-Star break with a 1.68 ERA. Got to give it to Jacob DeGrom. Yeah,
and Jake, how many wins does he have?
Yeah, I know. It was like, remember that year, like, Felix Hernandez was, like, under 500 and won the Cy Young? Didn't he go, like, 12-13, Jake, the year he won the Cy Young?
Something around that. And
something like that, right?
Be headed to the same thing.
Exactly. But the question is, what team will Jacob DeGrom finish the season with, Jake? As we talk a little bit about the All-Star game and then moving forward, you know, the trade deadline is also in 2 weeks. The fact that, Jake, the fact that his agent came out and said that the Mets' most prudent move might be to explore options for a DeGrom trade, you don't buy it. What percent chance do you think DeGrom gets moved, Jake, in the next couple of weeks? Zero?
-50.
-50. Wow, that's pretty strong, Jake.
This is why I'm boycotting the Mets. The Will Ponds, until they get rid of... No, I'm serious. This is until they get rid of the... They start acting like real owners. I've been done with this team for years. The fact is, the Mets should be looking to the future. They should be pulling the Cubs or the Yankees or the Astros or whatever. They should be selling Jacob DeGrom. He's 30 years old. They're not contending next year. He's going to be a free agent the year after that season. If they're contending at that point, I would be mildly surprised. And you know what? I'm doubting that Jacob DeGrom is going to sign a contract long-term to stay there through that nonsense. And he's going to be 32 at the time anyway. How many times are the Mets going to give somebody a 32-year-old contract or a 32-year-old that kind of contract and watch it bite him in the ass like it always does? This team needs to look to the future. They could get the biggest hole since we saw Bartolo Colon with that Expos trade when he brought back Grady Sizemore and the rest of those guys. And if Cliff Lee, it was Grady Sizemore, Cliff Lee, and I forget the shortstop that was playing for the Reds for a little while. Do you remember? You don't remember now, do you?
No, I do not off the top of my head. No.
So it was a heck of a hole. And that's the kind of haul they could get. Yes, they're not getting Gleyber Torres, but that's the other thing, is the Wilpons won't trade with the Yankees. Stop being stupid. You sound like a little 8-year-old kid that doesn't want to play with somebody else because they have a cooler baseball than you do. Like, stop. This is why your team sucks. It's because you're terrible owners, because you don't want to do something that benefits your team because it might say, you know what? This is good for fantasy people, too. This is why people lose in fantasy, because they don't want to trade with the person in first place.
Right. They can't look themselves in the mirror and understand where they are.
6-1, 7-1, 6-2, whatever it is. And it's like, oh, I don't want to help the team in first place. If it helps you, you don't know what's going to happen. You can't predict what's going to happen for the rest of the season. A trade is supposed to help both teams. A trade is supposed to hurt both teams. You're not supposed to feel great about it in every aspect. So
sacrificing something to get something else.
The Mets are going to continue to be a piss-poor franchise until the Wilpons are either gone or get their heads out of their asses.
The funny part, though, Jake, is even if the Wilpons do go, they will still be paying Bobby Bonilla a couple million every July 1st. The last thing I want to ask you about, Jake, before we sign off and give it up to Carton and friends here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, everyone's talking about Manny Machado. You know that Manny Machado is going to go. He even left the game in the fifth inning because they were worried about bad field conditions. They don't want to get this asset hurt. We're hearing a lot of buzz around the Phillies, maybe the Brewers, some talk about the Yanks and Red Sox. Where do you think Manny winds up? Because you got to think he's on the move in the next couple of weeks. The Orioles understand where they are. Where do you think he's going? You think he might be going to Philadelphia?
No, actually, while we're on the air a few minutes ago, there was somebody that says the Dodgers are back into the lead again. So I don't know. I said the Dodgers from the jump off. I'll just stick with the Dodgers. That's what I've said all along.
Do you think he's going to a National League team, Jake? And if so, if you're an AL owner only league, do you make any kind of 80 cents on the dollar move? Now,
at this point, you have to, because the three teams that everybody keeps rumoring is the Phillies, Dodgers, and Brewers. There's no American League. I said Brewers. There's no American League team in the conversation.
Right, so it doesn't look like, you know, there's been a slight talk about the Yankees or the Red Sox, but it looks like he may go to the National League. So if you're a Manny Machado owner in the next week, you may want to consider getting yourself another shortstop.